You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and print handicapped. Welcome to the reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for September 22nd. I'm Aaron Kahn from Drake University. Here is our first story. September 22nd, face of the day, Becky Windholm. The picture shows a photo of Becky Windholm looking into the camera on a bright day with a big smile on her face and a really nice looking brown hat. Becky Windholm helps keep things running smoothly behind the scenes at Mac and V Photography. Windholm, 31, was born and raised in Omaha, and she graduated from Omaha Northwest High School in 2008. She then went to college at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, where she studied broadcasting and new media. She earned her bachelor's degree in 2013. Windholm said she's had an eye for shooting video for as long as she can remember. Her father worked in videography and photography, so there was always some sort of camera laying around the house while growing up. In high school, she worked on the morning announcement broadcast, which also aired silly videos she and her friends recorded. She took that passion into college and is now making a career out of it. Windholm has worked a few different types of jobs and done a lot of freelance video shooting and editing since college. She took on many projects with Mac and V Photography co-founders Michelle Clark and Vivian Kavam during those days. But now Windholm has been an official member of the team for about a year. She wears many hats in the studio, 116 West Broadway, serving as a project manager and photo and video editor. She said working at Mac and V has been a great experience so far, noting the great chemistry the team has due to prior experience working with each other. Outside of work, Windholm and her husband, Matt, keep busy raising their two-year-old son, Philip. They also have another child on the way and are expecting in February. She loves spending time with her family, including their dog, an Alaskan Malmutine named Flora, who is 120 pounds of fluff and love. She enjoys taking the family to the zoo and watching Marvel films. To read more about Windholm and Mac and V and the Mac and V team, as well as the services the studio provides, head to macandv.com. Now that's a pretty nice article. Our next article is Holder Files, Withdraws Objection in Iowa Western Trustees Election, Highlights Concerns About Process. The picture shows Kirk Madsen on the left, listening to Brian Jack Holder on the right, voice some of his objections to the signatures on Madsen's nomination pensions during an objection hearing Tuesday at Iowa Western. Holder would later withdraw his objections. And they're both sitting kind of in an empty room. Brian Jack Holder, a candidate for the Iowa Western Community College Board of Trustees from Director District 7, requested an objection hearing to highlight the shortcomings in the nomination and election process. He presented an objection letter to Iowa Western President Dan Kinley and Board Secretary Aaron McKee Monday morning. He objected to 9 signatures on the nomination pension of Kirk Madsen, the incumbent in the District 7 race whom he is challenging. By law, the college had to hold an objection hearing within 2 business days. The hearing was held at noon on Tuesday at the Iowa Western Student Center, with the candidates and on objection panel that consisted of Iowa Western Board of Trustees President Coney Hornbeck, Vice President Dr. John Marshall, and McKee. There were several signatures that weren't in compliance with state code, Holder said. It wasn't Kirk's fault. I'm not alleging any fraud or anything. Five signatories named TJ as their school district instead of Council Bluffs Community School District. Three did not live in Director 7 and, therefore, did not have the right to nominate a representative for that district. And one failed to give the date they signed the petition. But rather than focus on the signatures, Holder brought up several points about the process. There's no state agency, no auditor's office, that checks to see if these signatures are valid, he said. Instead, it is up to eligible voters to determine that an objective they are not. He said he would ask the Iowa legislature to address that. Holder said Pottawatomie County ballots have not been cleared in regard to Iowa Western Community College Board of Trustees candidates. They are usually listed under Merged Area 8, without mention of the college, which some voters might find confusing. IWCC Board of Trustees should be on the ballot, he said. During the last election, there were, I think, 70 or 80 people who took a ballot and didn't fill that part in. Holder suggested community colleges be allowed to expand their boards so each trustee could represent a smaller number of constituents. And, hopefully, voters would know their representatives. He also thought the process should be updated. Candidates ought to be able to be nominated online, he said. You can register to vote online. Holder said when he was getting signatures to run for Congress, he had stopped at home to ask for a signature and found the resident was under quarantine because they had COVID-19. This person did sign his petition, so he left it at the sun. The person did sign his petition, so he left it in the sun and did not circulate it among other supporters. If he could have been nominated online, he would have been less likely to spread the coronavirus, he said. After stating his objections and opinions, Holder withdrew his objections, as he had planned to do all along, he said. I did this because it's the only way to bring some attention to these issues, he said. It wasn't to take Kurt off the ballot. Mattson thanked him for withdrawing his objections and said he should have made sure the signatories were filling out the form correctly. Holder said candidates should have time to such things corrected after pensions are reviewed. I have represented District 7 since 2007 and was up for re-election, he said. I've known Brian for many years. We've battled on the basketball court. I think a lot of the points he made are valid. Through his objections and all this, I've learned some things. That includes getting signatures and campaigning, Mattson said. Door knocking right now in our political climate is not easy, he said. You knock on the door and many people will not answer. People are angry. It's the state of our nation right now, and it trickles down to the local level. Hopefully, I can serve the district again and represent the people with positivity. 4 years ago, there were probably some people that signed my petition who were out of the district because I'm right on the boundary, Holder said, again making reference to the government checking petitions. I think there's things we can all do to make the process better, he said. Hornbeck said she had learned some things from this hearing. She said she's old enough to know what Megard Area 8 is, but younger people might not. Marshall said he was surprised when he ran that ballot, didn't explain where the district was or that the Board of Trustees was the governing body of Iowa Western Community College. I think we need to make that ballot better, he said. That was a really interesting and informative article. Our next article is Carter Lake Fire Department hosts concert in October. Our next article is Carter Lake Fire Department hosts concert in October. The picture shows a map of Southwest Iowa. To kick off Fire Prevention Week, the Carter Lake Fire Department will have activities and a Rock the Boot concert on Saturday, October 2nd. Starting at 2 p.m., there will be fire truck rides, vehicle and equipment demonstrations, games, a visit from the LifeNet helicopter, and EMTs will be providing free blood pressure screening and other services at the Carter Lake Ball Fields. The Rock the Boot concert will begin at 4 p.m. and feature three metro area bands: Dysfunction out of Glenwood Frenzy out of Omaha, and Wrecked Becky out of Omaha. The drummer for Frenzy is Carter Lake native Jeff Peck. Music genres will range from the 1980s to the 2000s, and there will be food trucks and a beer garden available. All proceeds from the beer garden and any donations will be used to support the Carter Lake Fire Department by funding future life-saving training and equipment, a press release said. Our next article is Iowa Farm Cooperative Hit by Ransomware, Systems Go Offline, which shows a picture of all of Iowa's different counties. A ransomware attack by the Black Matter Gang forced New Cooperative, an association of Iowa corn and soy farmers, to take their systems offline, but it said it created workarounds to receive grain and distribute feed, a person close to the business said. Member-owned New Cooperative said in a statement that the attack was successfully contained and that it had quickly notified law enforcement. It said it took its systems offline out of an abundance of caution and was working with data security professionals to quickly remedy the situation. It did not specify when the ransomware was activated. The attack hit just as Iowa's corn and soy harvesting is getting underway. Security researcher Alan Liska of Recorded Future said the criminals demanded a $5.9 million ransom for a decryptor key to unlock files they scrambled. He said a sample of their malware was uploaded to a research site either late Friday or early Saturday. Security researchers believe Black Matter may be a reconstituted version of the ransomware syndicate DarkSide that distributed the Colonial Pipeline last spring, then announced it was disabling. Black Matter claims on its dark website not to target critical infrastructure, though many would argue that New Cooperative is exactly that because it provides feed to livestock. In a post on its dark website, Black Matter threatened to publish 1 terabyte of data it claimed to have stolen from New Cooperative if its ransom demand was not paid by Saturday. The person close to New Cooperative, with knowledge of the case, speaking on condition that they could not be further identified, would not say whether a ransom was paid. Based in Fort Dodge, New Cooperative stores and markets the grain it collects and offers feed, fertilizer, crop protection, and seed. Based in Fort Dodge, New Cooperative stores and markets the grain it collects and offers feed, fertilizer, crop protection, and seed, according to its LinkedIn site. Our next article is Capital Digest Attorney General warns of storm-damaged vehicles. The picture shows a blue, sort of black and white picture of the Iowa Capitol during the day. A roundup of legislative and Capitol news items of interest. Miller issues vehicle warning. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller is warning Iowans that storm-damaged vehicles from parts of the country hit with hurricanes and flooding could be headed to Iowa, creating a dangerous situation both for consumers' wallets and Iowa roads. Thousands of vehicles were severely damaged in recent hurricanes, Miller said in a statement Tuesday. The threat is that a vehicle may be repaired only cosmetically, moved to Iowa, and offered for sale without indication of the prior damage. The current high demand in the used car market compounds fears that flood-damaged vehicles will make their way to the state and Iowans will become victims of scammers, according to the AG's office. This demand could give fraudsters an opening to take advantage of Iowans eager to buy used vehicles, leaving them to pay more and risk costly repairs in the future, Miller said. According to Consumer Reports, floodwaters can destroy electronics, lubricants, and mechanical systems in vehicles. Over time, the car's vital electronics, including airbag controllers, can be destroyed by corrosion stemming from floods. Iowans considering purchasing a used vehicle in the months ahead should go to NICB.org and punch in the VIN to see if it is on the registry. If a vehicle is on the list, most consumers should avoid buying it. Additionally, it is important to also obtain a full vehicle history report. These reports can be acquired at https://vehiclehistory.bja.ojp.gov, which is run by the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. Clean energy. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has proclaimed September 20th to September 24th as Clean Energy Week in conjunction with the 5th annual National Clean Energy Week. Reynolds noted that Iowa's nearly 5,900 wind turbines generate 60% of the state's electricity, the highest wind power share for any state. Across Iowa, clean and readily abundant forms of energy power more homes and businesses than ever before, Reynolds said. The clean energy sector is a growing part of the economy and has been a key driver of growth in Iowa in recent years, with 28,953 Iowans currently employed in the clean energy sector. Additional information about National Clean Energy Week is available at nationalcleanenergyweek.org. Farm to Table Talk. Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig and Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Vice President John Lawrence on Monday announced members appointed to the Farm to Table Task Force. They were directed during the 2021 legislative session to establish and co-chair the Farm to Table Task Force to identify strategies that will improve farm to table supply chain, making it easier for farmers to access markets and sell their products. The task force is charged with understanding and recommending how institutional purchasers, including schools, may produce food derived from local or regional producers and processors, including meat, dairy eggs, fruits and vegetables, nuts, and honey. Additionally, the task force, which will hold its first meeting next Monday, will review existing practices and recommend ways to improve direct-to-customer transactions, donation efforts, and nutrition programs, and submit its finding to the legislature by December 10th. Members include Naig Lawrence, Jane Libby, One Step and a Time Gardens, Bob Howard, Country View Dairy, Corrine Rowe, Rose Red Crows, Penny Brown Hubbard, Prairie Rivers of Iowa, Darrell Goer, Millow Locker, Steve Winders, Loffredo Fresh Produce, Jason Grime, Iowa Valley, RC&D, and Grimm Family Farm, Kelly Foss, Des Moines Farmers Market, David Smigmo, Cornell College Dining, Bon Appetit, Ellen Walsh Roseman, Harlan CSD Food Service, Farm Table Delivery, Matt Unger, Des Moines Area Religious Council, and Aaron Lemon, Iowa Farmers Union. Our next article is Forecast. Fall brings fall weather. The picture shows a bicyclist on a bright day about to go under a huge shrub of trees. It's the first day of fall, and with it comes some fall weather. The high today is 70, with light winds and sunny skies, according to the National Weather Service. Expect a cool, crisp morning with temperatures in the 50s before a climb around noon. The low tonight is 47. Pleasant fall weather remains in the forecast into early next week. Temperatures will average near or below normal for this time of year, though a day or two of above normal temps are expected, the Weather Service said in its forecast discussion. Precipitation chances remain low as well. Thursday is set to be sunny as well, with a high of 76. Wind speeds will be in the 5 to 11 mile per hour range, with gusts up to 18 miles per hour. The low is 56. Today, sunny, with a high near 70. North-northwest winds, 3 to 5 miles per hour. Tonight, clear, with a low around 47. Light and variable wind becoming south-southeast around 5 miles per hour after midnight. Thursday. Our next article is, Iowa teen gets probation, deferred judgment, and fatal robbery. The picture shows a gavel and has text that says, in the courtroom. A judge on Tuesday gave an 18-year-old Cedar Rapids man probation for a botched drug robbery that ended in the shooting death of his cousin last year. Tyrell Gatson was sentenced to 3 years probation for his conviction of second-degree robbery, the Gazette reported. His sentencing on the robbery was delayed a year so he could complete his probation for other charges in juvenile court, including conspiracy to deliver a controlled substance marijuana, carrying weapons, and obstructing prosecution. Prosecutors have said Gaston was 16 on January 24, 2020, when he went with his 18-year-old cousin, Andrew Gaston, to meet a 17-year-old to buy drugs. Police said that the cousins and another person ambushed 17-year-old Kyler Carson in a plan to rob him, but Carson pulled a gun and fired after he was attacked, killing Andrew Gaston and injuring Tyrell Gatson. Carson, now 19, faces trial on December 7th for voluntary manslaughter and other charges. Gaston completed a program at an adolescent residential treatment facility in Dubuque, went back to high school, and graduated, and got a job to provide for his three-month daughter, his lawyer said. Sunny, with a high near 76. South wind, 5 to 11 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 18 miles per hour. Thursday night. Mostly clear, with a low around 56. South wind around 7 miles per hour. Friday. Partly sunny, with a high near 71. Friday night. Mostly clear, with a low around 48. Saturday. Sunny, with a high near 73. Saturday night. Clear, with a low around 50. Sunday. Sunny, with a high near 82. Sunday night. Mostly clear, with a low around 58. Monday. Sunny, with a high near 86. Monday night. Mostly clear, with a low around 57. And then Tuesday. Sunny, with a high near 79. Fall is not taking its time coming around this year. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for September 22nd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Aaron Kahn-Gum from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from their listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. Murphy, new political maps could create chaos, and that's just fine. Chaos. That's one potential result of proposed new Iowa political maps that were published this week. But that chaos would not necessarily be a bad thing. In fact, it's sort of the whole point. The first proposal for new political boundaries in Iowa for the next 10 years were published Thursday by the state's Legislative Series Agency, a nonpartisan group of analysts that works out of the Iowa Capitol. It was the first significant step in Iowa's decennial redistricting process. The proposed maps were in many ways jarring. The proposed congressional map would dramatically alter Iowa's four districts. Western Iowa's conservative-leaning 4th district would be 44 counties, nearly half the state, and the political composition of Eastern Iowa's 1st and 2nd districts would change significantly, with the 1st swinging more Democratic and the 2nd more Republican. And there's the madness that is the 150 state house districts. 150 in the Iowa House and 50 in the Iowa Senate. As of Friday, it was still an estimate, but roughly 60 state legislators would be drawn into a district with at least one other incumbent state legislator, meaning two incumbents would have to face each other in the next election for the right to represent that new district. In one Quad Cities area district, among sitting senators, two Republicans and one Democrat would be drawn into the same new district. Like I said, chaos. But there's nothing wrong with a little chaos sometimes. And in this case, it's actually a big feature, not a bug. Redistricting is supposed to shuffle the deck a bit. That's why it's there in the first place, so we don't have the same exact people in our government representing the same exact regions for decade after decade. If we had decided status was fine, we would not have written into our constitution that this process be conducted every 10 years. We want the chaos. What's most important is not whether the redistricting process changes a district's political leanings in one direction or the other, or whether it creates uncomfortable decisions for incumbent lawmakers. What's most important is whether the process is fair and creates equal representation in Iowa's government. That's one of the best parts about Iowa's process, which is hailed nationally for its unbiased and nonpartisan nature. It is, by design, almost as fair and nonpolitical as possible. The nonpartisan LSA draws the map using a formula that is cold and unfeeling, based purely on the numbers, considerations are not given to protecting one party or the other, or even city lawmakers. They crunch the numbers and spit out a map. That description obviously oversimplifies the process, but it's also fairly close to the mark. We now move on to Council Bluffs neighbors, obituaries for September 22nd. Jeffrey Blackman, age 68. We now move on to Council Bluffs neighbors, obituaries for September 22nd. Jeffrey Blackman, age 68, passed away September 17th, 2021. He was born October 27th, 1952, to the late Dwayne and Eleanor Blackman in San Bernardino, California. In addition to his parents, he was preceded in death by father Dwayne Blackman, mother Eleanor Blackman, brother Charlie Blackman. Jeffrey is survived by his wife, Sherry Blackman, children April Rogers, Amy Vanderpool, Amber Blackman, siblings Gary Blackman, Danny Blackman, Brian Blackman, June Rizzo, 8 granddaughters and 2 great-grandsons, special nephews Patrick Stamper and Gary Stamper, nieces, nephews, cousins, and a host of other family and friends. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Friday, September 24th, 2021. Memorial service will be held at 3:30 p.m. at Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Saturday, September 25th, 2021. The family will direct memorials. Denise Yell, 98, formerly of Glenwood, passed away on September 18th, 2021, at Methodist Jenny Edmundson Hospital in Council Bluffs. Denise is survived by her children, Alan of Elkhorn, Iowa, Craig of Cottage Grove, Minnesota, Mark of Papillon, Nebraska, Kirk of Casper, Wyoming, and Deborah of Greeley, Colorado, along with her 8 grandchildren and 18 great-grandchildren. Celebration of life will be Saturday, September 25th, 2021, at 1 p.m., with visitation from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., 1 hour prior to the service. Memorials may be directed to Glenwood Public Library. The family suggests all guests wear masks for the service and wear crazy socks in memory of Denise. David E. McIntosh, age 54, passed away at the Florence home on September 4th, 2021. He was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, on April 2nd, 1967, to Harvey E. McIntosh and Joyce Ulrich. He is survived by his daughter, Destiny McIntosh, his mother, Janoyce Ulrich, his sister, Joanne Higgins, and nieces and nephew. He is preceded in death by his father, Harvey E. McIntosh, and his partner, Teresa Hoop. Funeral service will be held Saturday, October 9th at 2 p.m. at Calvary County Church, 22429 Highway 6, Council Bluffs. Calvary Country Church, 22429 Highway 6, Council Bluffs, 51503. Darlene J. Smith, age 95, passed away September 20th, 2021. She was born in Council Bluffs, Iowa, on November 13th, 1925, to the late Charles and Eleanor Mendenhall. Della Lean graduated from Abraham Lincoln High School with the class of 1943. After graduation, she worked for Howard Manufacturing Company. She later worked for the Council Bluffs Community School District. Darlene was a longtime member of Emmanuel Lutheran Church. In addition to her parents, she was preceded in death by her husband, John Smith, brother, Larry Mendenhall, foster grandson, Mike Blum. Darlene is survived by her sons and daughters-in-law, John and Glenda Smith, Jeff and Lorraine Smith, grandchildren, Brandy Reinhart, Sarah Dean, Samantha Showalter, Stephanie Townsend, Sadie Cinder, Charles Smith, great-grandchildren, Thomas, Caitlin, Collins, Carver, Cohen, Vivian, Roman, Scarlett, and Victor. Special nieces, Caroline Kalaghan, and Callie Mendenhall. A host of other family and friends. Funeral service at the Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home on Sunday, September 26, 2021 at 2 p.m. Visitation will be during the hour prior to the service. The family will direct memorials in her honor. Thomas Wayne Stanford, age 73, passed away November 30th, 2020 at CHI Mercy Hospital. Celebration of Life Visitation, Saturday, September 25th, 2021 at the Eagles Club from 2 to 5 p.m. with military honors by the Canesville Riders Honor Guard at 2:30 p.m. We now move on to sports with the article, A Look Back on Two Golds, which shows Josh Turk preparing to take a shot at the Paralympics in Tokyo. The saying goes, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But forgive Council Bluffs native Josh Turek for telling everyone about his post-Paralympic celebration. Only days after returning stateside following Team USA's gold medal-winning performance in Tokyo, Turek and seven of his wheelchair basketball teammates headed to Las Vegas for some celebration and relaxation. After all, it seemed a fitting way to honor the team's gold medal victory over Japan and, for Turek personally, a proper send-off to an iconic wheelchair basketball career. I don't think you'd see too many teams who had that in-depth of camaraderie and true friendship and brotherhood, Turek said. That's what saved us down the stretch, what got us through what got us through was that we had a lot of vets with a lot of moxie, and regardless of the situation, we never got rattled. There was a deep belief in each other. Lots of other teams would have cracked under those circumstances. That bond led to a second consecutive gold medal for Team USA. Prior to the 2016 Paralympics, the Americans hadn't claimed gold since 1988. And these particular Paralympic Games were unique for a number of reasons, the most obvious being that the competition followed a year delay and occurred during an ongoing pandemic. For Turek personally, these games were different because he didn't have to shoulder a ton of the scoring load. For so long, he played the role of go-to scorer or rebounder. In 2021, he averaged 10 minutes a game. His scoring numbers in the Paralympics were lower than in past years. That was fine in Turek's eyes. The goal all along was a gold medal, and that mission was accomplished. Truth and total transparency, I was sad with how I played, partially in the last two games, Turek said. I've made a career on being a knockdown shooter and a great scorer. In my final game, I scored 0 points, shooting 0 for 3. Maybe there's something poetic about the great scorer in his last game scoring 0 points and is still totally satisfied because the ultimate goal was to win a gold medal for your country. Turk displayed poise and clutch shot making down the stretch and many big moments to help Team USA claim the top prize. Against Germany on August 27th, Turk was tasked with taking a pair of free throws while holding a 1-point lead. He calmly sank both, giving the Americans a critical 3-point advantage on their way to victory. After sitting for most of the fourth quarter in the quarterfinal round against Turkey, Turek was fouled and sent to the free throw line with Team USA leading 47-45. He went a perfect 2-for-2, pushing the advantage to 4. They went on to win 52-45. Winning another gold medal following a year in which he balanced training, a full-time job, earning a master's degree, and being a husband was a taxing yet fulfilling experience. So, have the recent developments over the last month made Turek at all reconsider hanging up his basketball shoes and calling it a career? There was actually a moment during the process, because I love these guys so much and I'm still feeling good and playing well, that I gave some idea to maybe trying to win a world championship because none of us have. It's the one missing piece on our resume, Turek said. But the further you go, the more difficult it gets. Father Time is undefeated. There's no guarantee how your finish will be, and the amount of time, energy, and effort it will take just for me to try to maintain my level. I just don't think I have that desire. Ultimately, if you're to choose your finish line, I can't think of a more beautiful moment. USA across my chest, stars and stripes around my shoulder, gold medal around my neck, the pinnacle of my sport. There's no better way to end. While Turek's decorated basketball career has concluded, at least one more day of celebration is ahead for him. On Thursday, he and his family will hold a party in honor at Barley's from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. which is open to the public. Turek was especially gracious to Barley's for hosting watch parties during the Paralympics, and he also showed gratitude to the Council Bluffs YMCA, where he did much of his training, with many people going out of their way to help any way they could. Although his basketball playing days are over, Turek is excited for the future. He'll return to his job as an assistant technology professional with New Motion in Omaha, and beyond that, he's ready to fully embrace something that he has eluded him most of his life, spare time to enjoy with friends and family. I'm going to really enjoy having free time and not being so spread out, Turek said. I was finishing my master's and training full-time and having a job. It's going to be nice to have some evenings free. For example, tonight I'm going to have a drink with my brother-in-law. That's going to be lovely. Having weekends free with my wife will be too. He's also expressed a passion for public service. I have a real, genuine interest in entering some grassroots level politics, maybe running for something state level or city level, he said. For so long, I've represented Council Bluffs, Iowa, in a sporting aspect. I like to do something even more meaningful. Real change and improvement takes place at the legislative level. That might be a year or two down the road, but that's certainly something that piques my interest. Whether it's basketball, work, school, or a potential future in politics, Turek is a full go to make it a success story. That's been the story of his life. Set a goal and not only achieve the goal, but thrive while doing so. There are no half measures. That's just the way I've been built, he said. With everything, I hate mediocrity. My dad taught me early that if you're going to do something, do it 100%. That's what I tried to do with basketball. I trained as hard as I could. I feel really good that I won't have to look back and regret and wonder if I could have done something better. I got everything I could out of this body. I know that I don't want basketball to be the be-all, end-all of my story. Winning 2 golds was more than I ever expected for my career. I want to have just as successful part B to my life. That's why I wanted to finish my master's degree. I'm ambitious, and whatever I do or pursue, I want to be great at it. That story was really inspiring. Our next story is Eagles Volleyball Sweeps Bobcats, and it shows the Bobcats and the Eagles playing against one another as a girl is about to spike the volleyball. Heartland Christian Volleyball rebounded from a home loss on Monday night to Essex, defeating Iowa School for the Deaf in a road match on Tuesday. The Heartland Christian Eagles swept the ISD Bobcats 25-3, 25-21, 25-8. The Eagles got right to business with a 25-3 win in set one over the Bobcats before running into a much more competitive set two. The Bobcats trailed the Eagles by as much as 8 points before tying the set late at 20-20. Heartland then finished the match by scoring 5 of the last 6 points to earn the win, 25-21. The Eagles went on to complete the sweep with a 25-8 win in set three to earn their third win of the season. The girls played well, Heffernan said. Things got rough for us in the second set. I think sometimes in a bigger gym like this, we have to adjust to it. But they did a good job and found a way to finish. That second set was really an example of why you don't give up. We struggled a bit with our serve receive, and even though they're coming at you at a underhanded rather than overhanded, that comes at differently, which takes some adjusting to. But the girls did a good and eventually we struggled a bit with our serve receive, and even though they're coming at you underhanded rather than overhanded, that comes at differently, which takes at some adjusting to. But the girls did a good job and eventually figured it out, and I'm proud of how they did. Heartland Christian Volleyball fell in a tight 5-set match to the Essex Trojans on Monday night, 13-25, 25-21, 25-17, 21-25, 15-6, at home. After falling in the first game of the match, the Eagles stormed back and won games 2 and 3 over the Trojans. However, the Trojans had a rally of their own. Essex won a competitive set 4, 25-21, before completing their comeback in game 5 with a 15-6 win. Though the Eagles came up short, Heartland Christian coach Heather Heffernan was pleased with the team's effort given their numbers heading into the match. The game against Essex went well, Heartland coach Heather Heffernan said. We took them to 5, and the girls worked on serving more aggressively and hitting aggressively. We again had to play with only 6 players due to an injury and 1 player out sick. I think they did really well without having the choice of having any subs. Jules Thomas stepped up with the most aces on the team and 2nd in digs. Our next article is CB Swimming Falls to SC, and it shows a picture of Council Bluffs Lillian Lefferbeer competing in the 200-meter freestyle relay event. And you can see she's making a bit of a funny face as she takes a breath of air. The Sioux City Metro Swim Team defeated Council Bluffs in Tuesday's dual meet in Council Bluffs, 104-62. This was our first dual meet with a team this big of size, Lynx coach Logan Maxwell said. Sioux City is about twice the size of our team, so it was a great opportunity for our girls to compete and see where we stack against them while we're still young. 2 years ago, the final against Sioux City was a much different story. We were lucky to score 20 points against them, and I'm not one for moral victories, but it is one indicating a move up on the right track after seeing today's results. The Council Bluffs swim team won 3 individual events. Alina Rochticki took first place in the 50-meter freestyle with a time of 29.41 and also won the 100-meter freestyle with a time of 104.43. Claiming first in the 100-meter breaststroke was Aurora Miller, who notably placed second in the 50-meter freestyle. CB saw some other girls finish second in a number of events. Jocelyn Miller took second in the 200-meter IM with a time of 3 minutes. Jocelyn Miller took second in the 200-meter IM with a time of 300.39. She also placed second in the 100-meter breaststroke with a time of 131.48. Lillian Lefferber also placed second in the 100-meter backstroke with a time of 121.67. CB also saw their 200-meter freestyle relay team play second, as did the 400-meter freestyle relay. Members of both relay teams include Aurora Miller, Jocelyn Miller, Luciana Gruber, and Alani Rosticki. Gruber was a sub for an injured teammate in both relays. Coach Maxwell was impressed with how she performed in both events. Luciana filled a varsity role in 2 relays for Claire Crilly, for was out due to injury, Maxwell said. Luciana really stepped up to the plate and helped us fill that hole, did what she could, and gave us great efforts in both relays. CB will be back in the pool on Saturday as they head to Des Moines Lincoln for their next meet. Knowing that plenty of big-name programs will be competing, the Lynx look forward to the challenge. There's going to be big-name programs there, Maxwell said. We're looking forward to seeing where we end up in the team standings against them, and it's a meet that's going to help us continuously get better. Saturday's meet at Des Moines Lincoln is scheduled to begin at 11 a.m. Our next article is Eachhorn Third at Crington Prep. Lewis Central Cross Country raced in one of the biggest races of the year on Tuesday at the Crington Prep Invite in Omaha, which featured over 18 teams and around 740 combined varsity runners for boys and girls. Sophomore Ethan Ehorn continued his successful season, finishing third out of 439 racers for the boys' varsity race. He ran the 5-kilometer course in 16 minutes and 45 seconds. LC head coach Taylor May was proud of his team's performance. "I'm really proud of how kids performed tonight," he said. "It's a different race. We don't get to come across the river and run in Nebraska very often. It was run to bring some kids to see some different competition and some really good competition. I'm just really proud of how they performed tonight in a new situation." May added that he was especially proud of Edgehorn's as well as many other runners' individual performances. Other runners that stood out to May were sophomore Kay Derricks, finished 49th in the boys' race with a 18:40. Sophomore Isabel McNeil led the LC girls with a 39th place finish and a time of 22:52. Rusher Marwin Manns took 42nd with a 25.55, and freshman Maya Hilmelik came in 43rd with a 22.46. With a 22.56. Edgehorn was pretty happy with how he ran tonight. Ethan ran a smart race. He got out and put himself in a good position and held that. He got past in the last mile and was able to get back ahead of a prep kid. So that was really good to see. McNeil ran very well for us. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Nonpareil for September 22nd. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 3 p.m. IRS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about today's broadcast or any IRS program, please call the toll-free number from anywhere in Iowa at 877-404-4747. I'm Aaron Congum from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for listening.